Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com. Today, we are going to talk about depression, and we're also going to talk about two books written by our very distinguished guests. They are Will I Ever Be the Same Again? Transforming the Face of ECT Shock Therapy, as well as the ABCs of Recovery from Mental Illness. To help shed light on this, I am very pleased to introduce Carol Kivler. She is the founder of Courageous Recovery and the president of Kivler Communications. She was first diagnosed with mental illness in 1990, and Kivler suffers from periodic acute bouts of medication-resistant depression, which in her case is only responsive to ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. Presently, Carol has been living in recovery for the last 12 years. She's a very popular professional speaker and international coach. Carol is the author of an interactive journal called Blessings, My Journal of Gratitude. And her second book, Will I Ever Be the Same Again?, Transforming the Face of ECT, Electroconvulsive Shock Therapy, was a finalist for two book awards. Her newest book, I mentioned earlier, The ABCs of Recovery from Mental Illness, is an Amazon.com bestseller in its mental health category. Carol, I want to thank you so much for being so courageous to write these books and to talk about depression. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure, Susan.
So, Carol, you were first diagnosed with mental illness, clinical depression, in 1990, and you've been through four depressive episodes since then. And so tell us, what does it mean to have a mental illness?
Well, a mental illness is an illness that's very misunderstood. It's an illness that's not only deals with your brain, which is part of your body, but it impacts your physical well-being as well as your mental well-being. And depression is the number one leading cause of disability in America today. So we need to start talking more about it, and I thank you for bringing me on to have this discussion.
I was just saying that, you're right about the stigma of depression, and but now we're starting to see celebrities coming out of the closet, so to speak, to talk about their own depression and how, you know, long they've kept it a secret. I think Catherine Zeta-Jones is one of the more recent ones that celebrities that I'm thinking of. But please go ahead with what you were saying.
No. What I was going to say is that there's so many now categories of mental illness, from bipolar disorder, which you're hearing a lot about. That's what the celebrity that just came out, and to all the way to schizophrenia, to major depressive disorder, to anxiety disorder, to obsessive compulsive disorder, to personality disorder. So there's so many categories or labels for mental illness, not to mention all the addiction diagnoses that are coming, what we call dual diagnosis. They have addiction issues and usually with an underlying mental illness fueling the addiction.
Right. So, thank you for clarifying that. I think we don't normally think of all of those different types of categories of illness under the sort of header of mental illness, but it's good to kind of look at it that way. So what symptoms of depression did you experience that prompted you to get help? I mean, what really happened there?
Well, the first thing for me was I had a major sleep disruption and with racing thoughts. From there, I had a hard time concentrating, very hard to even read a sentence or so. From there, I went on to very high anxiety to the point where it was paralyzing for me. From there, unfortunately, I bridged into something called a psychotic break, which is when you really lose touch with reality. I envisioned my family being penniless and living out on the streets, and so I stopped eating because I thought, what kind of mother would take food out of her children's mouths? And from there, I went into suicidal ideation, which I was consumed with ending it all, ending the hopelessness, and just checking out of life.
And you know what's fascinating? In the book that I read, which is Will I Ever Be the Same Again, it was really fascinating to hear you talk about how, you know, you had this really charmed life. You know, you had a beautiful mm-hmm. home. You had three children. You were, you know, married to a lawyer. And what did you have to be depressed about? But I think that's what's so fascinating. I mean, very sad, but it's really interesting to see how this disease works, and it kind of takes you by surprise.
And it did take me by surprise. We had no idea what was happening to me. And because as the symptoms progress, what happens is you start to have physical symptoms. Because you're sleep deprived, you have joint aches, headache, neck ache, back ache. So in the beginning, I was being looked at for physical ailments versus a mental illness.
Yes. And now you talk about ECT, which is the acronym for electroconvulsive therapy, and that being the only mode of treatment you were responsive to. What I think is so interesting, you hear so much about, you know, medications, and but for some reason those didn't work for you, and it really was electroconvulsive therapy that really kind of helped save you.
It absolutely. I am not a proponent of saying, you know, let's start ECT right away as soon as someone gets diagnosed with a depression. Not at all. My doctors for weeks, I was put on medication, and they changed the medication. When I was hospitalized, they continued to douse me with antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, antipsychotics, and the medications were not jump-starting my neurotransmitters so that I could, in fact, come out of the depression. That's when ECT was recommended.
Mm. And so I guess these antipsychotic medications, I mean, they do in fact work for some, but not others, and it's mostly because it's biological, or
you have a chemical imbalance in your brain. And just recently there was a study that said that when you're in a depression, your brain is in a hyperactive mode, a hyperconnectivity mode, and so the antidepressants actually bring that hyperactivity down. Well, the ECT does exactly the same thing. It helps regulate how the neurons are transmitting in your brain.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about the treatment itself. What exactly is it that you experience as you're going through ECT?
Well, ECT is nothing like it's portrayed in the movies, first of all. Secondly, it's a treatment option that's been around since the 30s. And when it was introduced in the 30s, it was very much different than it is today. There was no anesthesia there. There was no muscle relaxant. So we have improved, like most medical treatments have improved through the decades. ECT has improved as well. You're giving an anesthesia, you're given a muscle relaxant. Most of what's done to you is done after you are put to sleep. You have a mouthpiece in so that you're protecting your teeth and your tongue. And you're given, depending upon the kind of ECT that you're getting, you're put to sleep and then given the treatment option. It happened so quick, Susan, that I recall vividly thinking when I got into the recovery room and I woke up, oh my gosh, they didn't do the treatment. What happened that I couldn't have it done? And they said, no, it's been done. You're already there. You know, you're done.
Wow.
It's a very, very quick treatment. also, I recall vividly they're saying, you know, you may have a little body ache, you may have a headache, and I didn't have any of those things. That's when, so when I did wake up, I thought maybe I didn't even have the treatment yet.
So you felt pretty good afterwards.
Well, I didn't, for about the first three treatments, I really didn't feel any different. It was not until after the third treatment that my family recognized, before I did, that there was some affect changed in my face.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, I'm thinking of the movie Angel at My Table. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. It's about the life of an Australian author, and she went through, she had issues with depression and went through electroconvulsive therapy, and there are images of her in the film where she's kind of lying in this room, you know, surrounded by glass so that, you know, the doctors can observe, and it's really frightening. You know, it's like a frightening imagery. But, you know, this happened to her back, I think, when you were saying this all started, which was, you know, probably in the late 30s, early 40s for her, and you're absolutely right that there, you know, people have this, you know, kind of stigma and this fear of ECT, but the way you're describing it, sounds like, okay, just, you know, another form of, you know, an alternative therapy.
Mm-hmm. That's all it is. And it's you go into an outpatient, almost like an operating room that you would if you were coming into a hospital for an outpatient treatment of some sort, whether a small medical procedure. And so, you know, you get in there, you get undressed like you do with anything else, and the whole, from the beginning, from the time you walk into that office to the time you leave, it's less than an hour many times.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So tell us, what was the experience afterwards? So what did you notice first in with respect to your depression and this particular treatment, I guess, how did you know that it was working?
Well, as I said before, my family noticed it before I noticed it. But it's gradually. You don't snap, the light switch doesn't go on one day and the depression is gone. It was a gradual process of every day the veil of hopelessness was lifted a little bit higher for you. And I remember sitting in my home at one point after having quite a few ECT treatments and thinking, my gosh, colors are brighter now. It was almost as if eventually the veil just was lifted. I was in a fog for so many months,
right.
And all of a sudden I was back. I mean, I actually lost Carol going through that depression, each one of those depressions. You know, where did Carol go?
Of course. I mean, I think when you're in a depression, you're not able to thrive and be who you are in your complete essence. So that's what depression does. It's, you're exactly right. It's like a veil. I like the way you describe that. And I think it's really wonderful that you're on this show to talk about this, because it's so. I think the concept of depression, I mean, I know at least in conversations with my own parents who are very old school and they didn't believe in depression, or, you know, why do you need, you know, what's depression anyway? And, you know, if you have your family, why should you be depressed? And, you know, mm-hmm. I think, and of course, treatment for depression is such a, you know, was such a taboo subject, at least in my family. But what I'm so happy to see is that there's, you know, more openness about this discussion, and I'm very happy to see that you've written a book about electroconvulsive therapy, which I have not really seen before, you know, spoken about in such detail and openness. So thank you for being on the show. And since we're halfway through our discussion, I'd like to actually share with our audience where they can learn more about you and your books. You have a website, right, called carolkivler.com.
That's correct. That's my blog site, carolkivler.com, and it's K-I-V as in Victor, L-E-R, or at courageousrecovery.com.
Great. And they can find both books. And you were saying that the ABCs of Recovery from Mental Illness just launched within the last 6 months.
That's correct.
Right? So congratulations. Mm-hmm. Tell us now, you know, about your story, because it's very personal, and of course, I imagine it must have been very must have been a tough decision for you to decide, you know, with your family to come out in the open about it. Tell us about that.
Well, I was a part-time college instructor when depression brought me to my knees and basically changed my life and my family's life forever. And I had four, as you know, I have had four episodes in a 10-year period. And and during those 10 years, all I really worried about was the depression coming back, because I was told I had the kind of depression that was reoccurring. So I spent a tremendous amount of wasted time worrying about the depression coming back, and of course it did come back. It was not until after my fourth depression when I really took my wellness into my own hands, not only with the ECT and the talk therapy and the medication, but I started putting in other kinds of wellness practices, from journaling to prayer to meditation to massage therapy to acupuncture. And when I started to get when I started having longer periods of wellness and started thinking, gosh, I didn't really cause this, I don't have anything to be ashamed of, I started talking to my children, who by then were much older than when I had started going through the depression. And I recall vividly sitting down with each one of them and saying, I want to tell our story, and I need to hear your thoughts about that. Are you comfortable with me coming out and talking about some of the most intimate things of our family life? And I am blessed because all three of my children said, you know, Mom, if this can help one family more easily go through what we went through, not knowing what we did, then you've got to write this story. So they've been my biggest supporters throughout this entire process. But, Susan, it was not an easy book to write. As you can imagine, it took me, after I get their okay to do all of this, took me another number of years to really get it out and ready for publication.
Sure. And, you know, you call depression the beast, which, you know, I have to agree with you. I've been through depression, of course, not of the nature, I guess, that you experienced, but it does feel like a beast. And do you mind sharing with your audience, I guess, you write very intimately, and I think the success and beauty of the book is how candid you are about how it just preyed upon you. And could you share with us some experiences of how it affected your, you know, of course we know about how it affected you. You mentioned that earlier, but how did it manifest itself in within your family, with your children and your husband?
Well, it was very hard. Nobody knew exactly what was going on. All they knew is that their mother left. Their mother wasn't their mother anymore. My husband's wife wasn't his wife anymore. And it was very frightening for them because I didn't seem to care about the things I had always cared about. And what was most frightening was because I was such a mother who was made sure that clothes were washed and food was in the house and meals were prepared and homework was done, and all of a sudden I just didn't really care about anything. I didn't care physically about myself. I mean, my grooming was ridiculous. I didn't care what I had on. I didn't care if my hair was combed. And that was not the mother that they were accustomed to having. So they weren't sure exactly what was happening. It was very, very hard. It was hard on my parents because my parents thought, my goodness, did they do something to me in my childhood that would cause this? My sisters were just longing to find out, did I commit a criminal act? Did I steal? Did I cheat? What happened?
Or maybe perhaps did you suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder or something like that?
Exactly. Did something happen again in my childhood that was now surfacing and causing me to go into this depth of depression? And so everyone wanted answers. And when the doctor said, you know, this has a genetic component to it, this, you know, she doesn't have to have trauma to have a depression. And once we understood that and we started, once I got out of the hospital the first time and I started thinking, gosh, I have 38 first cousins. How could I be the only one in my family that has the genetic predisposition towards depression? Started to talking to cousins who said, oh, my goodness, I've suffered from depression here and there. And then before I knew it, one of my cousins said, what about grandmom? Excuse me, she used to have what we call dark days, but, you know, she had 12 children. She used to stay in bed days at a time. We all thought she needed to get away from the kids. Well, the problem is, she may have very well had depression.
Mm-hmm.
But
they didn't know how to classify it back then.
They didn't, of course not. So there is, it's interesting because as we look back now into the family history, there were definitely signs of depression in both sides of the family, not to mention that my father's family had a lot of alcoholism in it. And that, again, is a precursor because you're talking people are self-medicating out of their depressions.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, my God. How fascinating. And so I guess once you started opening up, then you started discovering other members of your family opening up as well. So,
oh, absolutely. And the more we talked about it, the more open we were, the more we recognized how prevalent it is in our family.
Yeah. Now, thank you for sharing that, and let's now turn to, I guess, your recovery process, and what did you learn about, you know, the treatment and then how to begin the recovery process? What are some of the things that you're doing or that you have done to help you recover?
Well, I think the very first step in recovery is acceptance that you have a non-curable illness that is manageable, but it is only manageable through commitment that you make to integrate lifestyle changes that are sustainable. Mm-hmm. And we can't depend on medication and talk therapy to be the be-all out of depression. I can't depend on just ECT being that magic bullet. It's one of the elements that keeps me in recovery, but it takes a whole lifestyle change and commitment. If you had diabetes, you'd make lifestyle changes. You'd start using insulin. You'd have medication. You would integrate exercise. You would lose weight. We have to do the same thing with a mental health disorder
recovery. Yeah, that is such a great, I think, analogy because it's so you have to treat this depression like a chronic illness.
It's a chronic illness. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so tell us about the lifestyle changes. What are we talking about exactly?
Well, the lifestyle changes such as exercise. Exercise is absolutely essential because exercise releases endorphins. Endorphins are what I call the happy bubbles, you know, the mood elevators. And for anyone that has any kind of a mental health disorder, we need those mood elevators. So exercise is absolutely essential for me. So I start and found, believe it or not, before I even read about this, I kind of fell over this without even recognizing it because I started exercising at a gym and somebody said, hey, do you want to do a half marathon? And that led to some additional training. And I remember thinking, gosh, I'm feeling so much better. My mood feels so much better. And so I recognized that exercise not only helped me with my depression and keeping my depression at bay, but it helps me tremendously with anxiety. So when my anxiety is off the charts, the best thing I can possibly do is get on the treadmill or the elliptical for 45 minutes. And I find that I work through a lot of that anxiety when I am involved in exercising. Besides the exercising, with many of these medications comes weight gain. So you've got to be really looking at nutrition and what are you putting in your body? The medications are making us gain weight, so we've got to be more aware of the food choices that we're making. Another thing is I've got to be really watch my sleep. Sleep disruption is very it's a slippery slope for me. So when I go on the West Coast, I stay on East Coast time because I'm looking to get 7 hours of sleep every day. I then go into journaling. And I remember in the hospital when they say to me, you know, get out of your head and put it on paper. And I journal for just a half a page every single morning before I interact with any other human being in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm journaling for 15 or 20 minutes. And I look, when I look back in those journals, you can see how my mood has changed when I'm starting to go, getting down that slope again and maybe heading towards a depression. So journaling
it's a great way to kind of see what your pattern is.
Oh, absolutely.
When you have to start. Wow.
Mhm. Mm-hmm. I also use journaling because when something is sort of bubbling up in me and I can't articulate what it is, the minute I put pen to paper, it comes right out on paper. So
wow.
I can address what I'm feeling, feel those feelings, and work through those feelings with journaling. From there, I'm talking about having something on my calendar to look forward to, celebrating the little things that I get accomplished. Because I like to say, a recovering A-plus personality. I am a very driven person, and mm-hmm. that personality, being very driven, can take on too much. So I've got to be very cognizant of what's on my platter. Am I overdoing it? And if I am overdoing it, how do I get off the treadmill of life and get out of this go, go, go mentality and just
right.
learn to be and learn to be? I often say to people, we're a human being, not a human doing. So sometimes we need to quiet ourselves down.
I love that.
Yeah, you quiet your mind down a little bit and start spending some time in nature, spending some quiet time with yourself, and sometimes just volunteering and getting out of my own life and helping out somebody else is enough to get me away from the pity party that I find myself having sometimes.
I really like what you just said and the idea of finding peace in the present and being less of a human doing but a human being. That is, I've never heard that. It's so true. We're all human doings and not human beings sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
absolutely.
Gosh, it's the life we, you know, this, and plus the age of technology. Someone's always texting or, you know, we're driving and we're doing this and that, and we've got every moment of our entire day consumed with something that we're doing, and, well, I can't thank you enough, Carol, for coming onto the show as our guest and talking so candidly about depression and also electroconvulsive therapy and helping us, trying to allay sort of those concerns and also the stigma associated with both. So thank you again for coming onto our show, and I want to remind our audience that Carol can be found at www.carolkivler.com, KIVLER.com, and courageousrecovery.com. Congratulations on both your books. I wish you tremendous success. I'm sure you will be, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who don't recognize what they have, and probably hearing this show may encourage them to take a look at what you talked about.
Oh, that's my hope.
Yes, and I want to thank our audience very much for tuning in. Join us next week on Tuesday, May 22nd at 2 p.m. when Polly Whitehorn, who's our Director of Events, will interview Gay Hanna. She's the Executive Director of the National Center for Creative Aging, an interdisciplinary nonprofit organization that focuses on creative expression through the arts and humanities for seniors and communities. To learn more about eCare Diary, visit our website, ecarediary.com. You can register for free for our personal care diary tool if you are a caregiver for an aging parent or loved one. Find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, bye-bye.